This is that amazing young man from Overbrook.
I'm gonna have to form an army to pull this off.
I want him here, at Kansas.
Newman!
Hey, man, how you been, buddy?
I'm good, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging on, Doug.
So I'm gonna jump right into the questions, if that's all right.
That sounds great.
All right, will you talk about your new film, Jayhawkers, and how you use Kickstarter to fund it?
Sure. We knew we were going to have a tough time finding enough money from investors to really complete the budget for the film. So we chose to do a Kickstarter campaign to try to raise some money to supplement the film.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time I'd ever done anything like that, and so it was really kind of pretty interesting experience. The thing about using Kickstarter is that I think you really have to, when you approach investors, you have to try to get to the people. You have to really try to contact people that care about what about the story you're trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems, it seems easier than it's not as easy as it sounds, for example. Especially with something like, with Jayhawkers in a basketball film, that wasn't really, this really the first sports movie I'd ever made, so I'm not known for my sports films really. And so, what we tried to do was we really tried to connect with obviously Jayhawk fans, and really try to, connect with people that really network in terms of those kind of groups, those kind of fan groups and organizations and all those kind of things. And that was a big part of how we succeeded.
Yeah. And why did you want to tell tell this story and make this film?
Well, when I first got the idea for the film, when Will Chamberlain passed away, and when he passed away, all these articles started coming out about his time in Lawrence and how he was instrumental in really kind of getting integration started in Lawrence and all of that. And I just had never heard anything about any of that. And I didn't think many people had heard anything about that side of his life and that part of his time here at KU. And so I just thought it would make a really interesting film. And so when we started researching it, there was just, a lot of really great things that came out of research, not just about Will Chamberlain, but Paul Allen and, Chancellor Franklin Murphy and Dick Harp, who was the other coach. And so it really just kind of, appeared like, this was a movie that was part of the things I like, stories I like to tell, and really just a great story in general.
Right. And what was Wilt Chamberlain's time in Lawrence like?
Well, I think his time in Lawrence was good and bad, the thing that people, we try to get across a bit in the film is that, Wilt Chamberlain's really kind of the first superstar college athlete in many ways. And, the whole thing that you see all the time now about how they recruit these top-notch players and they have to, go all out to get these guys, and it's highly competitive, and every university in the country is after these young guys. And, so he's really the first guy to really be on this crazy level of that, where he's a superstar really before he arrives here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he was already a celebrity when he arrived. I mean, he was a celebrity in high school. And so that was one part of it that was, that I think was really, so when he gets here, he's a celebrity and has a lot of power. But, what happened was that he didn't realize Lawrence was segregated.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't quite tell him that part of the deal with Lawrence. And, So gets here, he's stunned that it's segregated. And so he comes from Philadelphia, you know, his whole idea of coming to KU and was because it wasn't segregated. Mm-hmm. And so he's ready to leave, and so they, you know, Fog Allen and Chancellor Murphy, and who Chancellor Murphy had wanted Will Chamberlain to come because he saw, you know, using his celebrity really, you know, help integrate KU and the city. Mm-hmm. So all of that really just, you know, got things started here. And so in that sense, you know, he was burdened by things that, you know, he wasn't really prepared for, you know. And probably as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid, it wasn't really all that interesting. But you know, he got involved with it. And then as well, you know, Fog Allen ends up not being able to coach him, which the whole reason it came was to, you know, to be coached by Fog Allen. And when a, you know, star player loses the guy who recruited him, it's a really big deal.
Right.
And so, you know, there, you know, the whole notion that the reason he came to KU was Fog Allen. So, and then, you know, Coach DeCarp takes over, and Coach Harper's really a great man because he's, you know, he's more interested in changing the culture of KU and Lawrence. And winning is important to him, but, you know, he's kind of a, you know, he sees sports as not just about winning and losing, but about really changing character and changing society. And, you know, he's interested in things outside of sports in some ways.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a really complicated thing. And so, you know, but at the same time, Will Chamberlain makes a lot of friendship. Bob Billings in particular becomes his best friend. And, you know, so I think it was a great experience for him in a lot of ways. And at the same time, you know, he hangs out on 18th Vine in Kansas City and, you know, gets to be involved in that scene. But, you know, he doesn't get really anything that he came to KU and Lawrence for. He doesn't get to win a championship. He doesn't get to play for Fog Allen. You know, he didn't get anything he wanted. So I think, you know, that was really his farewell speech that he gave, you know, right before he died, mm-hmm. that last time he came back to KU. You know, I think when he's talking about the bittersweet thing, he's talking about the game, the loss of the big game, the championship game, but I think it's also a lot of other things as well. I think his time here was bittersweet as a whole.
Right. You know, you've made all your films in Kansas. What are the pros and cons of making films here?
Well, you know, the good news is that, you know, it's easy to make films here. I mean, people are not jaded by movies, and they're not, you know, they're very supportive, and you can really get, you know, the kind of help you need. I mean, that's the real reason I've always stayed in Kansas, you know, is because, you know, it really, you know, I guess I've built a base of support here for myself to a large degree, but, you know, that's always been a big part of my whole thing was, you know, when you don't have a lot of money to make movies, you need a lot of help.
Right.
And so that part of it is really great. Probably the downside, at least a price you pay for it, is that we're not, you know, we're in Kansas, you know, and so, you know, we're not in the media world, and people don't care about us much out here, you know, and, you know, so we're kind of overlooked to a large degree, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a price you kind of pay for being out here. But, you know, I guess where I'm at this point in my career, you know, it's more about, you know, it's more about just telling the stories I want to tell, and all the other stuff kind of doesn't matter to me as much anymore.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about your background. I know your childhood and growing up was a big influence on you and your work. What was growing up in Junction City like, and what was your family like?
Well, I kind of had a unique family. You know, my father was an older man. He was 60 when I was born. He was born in 1898. And so, you know, that's just 30 years or so after slavery. And I think because I grew up around older people, I heard a lot of older stories, and I just grew up around older issues and you know, really history in a large degree. In the past, you know, was a, you know, I heard a lot about the past as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think that really kind of fueled my interest in history to some degree. And then, you know, growing up in Jefferson City, I grew up around the Buffalo mm-hmm. Soldiers. My parents weren't military, but everybody else was for the most part.
Yeah.
And so the Buffalo Soldiers were stationed in Jefferson City. So I grew up around those men. And so that's another kind of influence on the history side, I think. And also grew up in a very racially diverse world, you know, just, you know, the Buffalo Soldiers brought these war brides back from Japan and Italy and Germany and Vietnam and Korea. And so I grew up with the kids I went to school with were all mixed, a lot of mixed, you know, racially mixed children. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I think has an influence on my interest in race and those things as well. So I'm sure Jefferson City's had a, you know, left its mark on me in various ways.
Right. Another thing from your background is when you talk about, I know you worked as a peace and civil rights activist for a while.
Right. When I was thrown out of high school. And, you know, because of riots that were happening at that time, a lot of, you know, racial discrimination kind of things were happening, and there were riots at my high school, and I was thrown out during that time, and I ended up going to a Catholic school, and so, you know, I think the history part of me and all of that also created kind of a social justice interest, you know, because you can't really learn about the past without kind of learning about why people do the things they do, you know, which many times really means social justice. And so, you know, when I went to the Catholic school, I met a priest by the name of Father Frank Cody, and he was very instrumental in pushing me to go to college. And from there, I met the Berrigan brothers, and, you know, and they influenced me in terms of peace and civil rights and kind of, you know, looking at these issues from a really kind of nonviolent kind of point of view. And so it's, you know, all of that, I think, you know, has had a real influence on the stories I try to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess I'd say that, you know, it, all of that is kind of the story I tell now. In various ways, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, the Will Chamberlain, you know, Fall Valley story. I think the thing that interested me about that was that, you know, he comes here and there's conflict and there's racial conflict and there's segregation and what interests me is the complication of those things. You know, how, you know, what's been really interesting in the fallout of that film has been people talking about how, and we should try to show it in the film how people were there and, you know, and they were participating in segregation and they didn't really realize,
mm-hmm.
you know, how someone can look at, can, you know, they, you know, black people were not telling their white friends, you know, about their segregated experience, and their white friends were looking at them being segregated against and not really understanding what that meant,
right.
you know? And so there's this kind of silence that, invisible man kind of treatment that happens and all that I find really fascinating.
Right. All your films, you know, they seem to be driven by political or politics and current events. How do you think the current political situation affects what you're working on and maybe even relates to Jayhawkers?
Well, yeah, you know, I've got a film called Destination Planet Negro,
mm-hmm.
which really kind of, you know, I think really nails what's going on right now in particular, you know?
Yes, friends. Destination, planet, Negro.
With President Obama and with his, you know, the treatment he's received as president, and kind of the current state of racial politics in America, and you know, that thing I was describing in Jayhawkers, how people can see something and not really see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what's happening with I think what's happening right now with President Obama and the Tea Party people, and you know, there's this whole big, you know, racial political thing happening right now, and it's hard to identify it, but it's definitely there. And you know, one of the great things about the segregation fight was that you could easily identify it. You know, you could point to a sign on the restroom and say, hey, you know, they won't let me come in here, and you know, they've got this, you know, place over here where we're not allowed to go in or whatever. And so that made it easy to fight. I mean, we can identify things. They're much easier to fight against things that can be identified. But the complications now is that, you know, they have the dog whistle now, which is the where, you know, people, you know, kind of give these silent kind of understated subtextual influences on all of us that many times are racially motivated and racially, you know, filtered. And so, and they influence us, and they move us in different directions, black folks, white folks, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the new problem that we have. You know, they do it with gay people, they do it with straight people, they do it with all the different groups, you know, immigrants, you know, Mexican Americans, Latinos. So, you know, it's become a lot more complex and harder to fight in terms of, and really kind of even harder to kind of demonstrate in films.
Right.
You know, you've got to, I mean, Destination is about time travel. And one of the reasons I wanted to make that film was that, and I wanted to show through time travel how things have changed and at the same time, things have stayed the same.
Right. And you've been you're showing that around too, around town too as well, right?
Yes, it's been traveling, you know, around the country over the last year.
I read about a screenplay that you wrote that's kind of in development called Colored Men. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that I wrote that one actually about 10 years ago now. It's been with me a long time, and that's about the largest murder trial in American history. And I wrote that when I was still kind of working for Hollywood. And it's about the Houston riot of 1917, where about 150 black soldiers, Buffalo soldiers, marched on to the city of Houston after kind of being abused by the police. There's this incident that makes them believe that they're being attacked at the base. And one of their men has been attacked in town. And these guys march on the city and march on the Houston police. And it's, I think, a really interesting story. And you know, I try to make these films that Hollywood won't make. You know, when I was working for Hollywood, that script would get me other jobs in Hollywood, but my agent always told me no one in Hollywood would ever make that film.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I knew I needed to. I think I've got to make that one. So you know, I try to think of myself as making the films Hollywood won't make.
Right.
You know.
And is that the next one that you plan to like direct yourself?
Well, it's you know, I've actually got another one that we're working on. We're trying to raise money for right now, which is the Emmett Till story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, another civil rights film. And for some reason, you know, no one has made that film. And the guys that made Mississippi Burning and Ghost of Mississippi, they approached me to write the screenplay for that about 5 years ago. And but they've not been able to find any of the funding for that film. And so we've taken it upon ourselves to try to make that film.
Yeah. Well, I hope that one gets made, too.
Yeah, I think that's a really important film, and you know, one that you would think would be made a long time ago, but you know, that's kind of part of what we're talking about.
Right. All right. Well, that's all I have for you. Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk with me about that stuff.
Oh, hey man, thank you, Matt.
There is no anyone place where I belong. spirit's meant to be free. And so now everyone.